Okay, good evening everyone. Welcome to this meeting of the City of Sydney Local Planning Panel. Before we start, I would like to acknowledge we meet on the land of the original custodians of the land, the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation. I pay my respects to Elders past and present. The panel also acknowledges current Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people who reside in this area. So the meeting tonight is to consider the development applications on the agenda, and panel members have read the agenda papers for the meeting, submissions received, and have had a briefing from council staff on items on the agenda. Panel members tonight are myself, Richard Pearson, as independent chair. To my right, I've got Helen Lockhead, who is the independent expert tonight, and to my left, Amelia Thorpe, who is the community representative. So welcome everyone to the meeting. Please be assured we will be making our decisions based on planning merits of each application and following consideration of views in, expressed in submissions and by any people addressing the panel tonight. Determinations will be by a majority of votes of the panel and entitled to vote. If votes are tied, the chair will have a casting vote. As an important transparency measure, the reasons for our decisions are published in the minutes of the meeting, as well as the decision itself. If we go against officer recommendations, we will state our reasons for doing that. So the format tonight is that the Manager of Planning Assessments will provide an overview of each application on the agenda as they are considered, key issues raised, and the recommendations of council staff. We'll then hear from members of the public who have registered to speak, and we do have some speakers registered, followed by the applicant and or the applicant's representatives who may like to address any issues raised by members of the public. Please note there is a 3-minute time limit and a bell will ring at 3 minutes. It is possible to extend that time frame, but please try to stick to 3 minutes. I ask each speaker be heard in silence and that courtesy and respect be observed throughout the meeting. Please ensure no personal criticism is directed at any speaker or council staff. Panel may ask questions of the speakers to clarify our understanding of what is being said. And please note that if you have registered to speak, your address will be recorded, as all public meetings of the panel are recorded and recordings are made available on the City's website. Please note no recording or filming of the meeting other than this. After hearing from speakers, the panel will consider and make its decision on each application. We may adjourn the meeting to confer amongst ourselves, or we may make the decision in public. If we do adjourn, we will reconvene to make the decision in public. If we require more information is needed, it may be that we defer an application for consideration at a later date. So, item one on the agenda is disclosures of interest, and in accordance with clause 4.6 of the Code of Conduct for the Local Planning Panel, all members have signed a declaration of interest in relation to each matter on the agenda, and no members have disclosed any pecuniary or non-pecuniary interest in any matters on the agenda tonight. Item two is confirmation of the meeting of the minutes of the meeting of the 30th of January, and the panel notes those meetings, which were endorsed by me as chair of that meeting. We now turn to item three, which is a development application for 79 to 83 Abercrombie Street, Chippendale, and I'll ask Bill Mackay to briefly run through what is proposed and the council officer recommendation. Thank you, Bill.
Thank you. So this is an application for a development at 79 to 83 Abercrombie Street in Chippendale. It seeks consent for alterations and a three-storey addition to an existing heritage building and the adaptive reuse as a commercial offices with ancillary lecture room. The site is located within a B4 zone and the development's permissible with consent. The application's recommended for approval subject to conditions. The application was notified in September and October of 2018. 324 owners and occupiers were notified and 3 submissions were received. The submissions related to the potential construction impacts of the development in terms of increased construction traffic, lack of parking, and the impact of vibration on the neighbouring terraces. So this plan shows the site identified in red and the location of the submissions. So the submissions came from the premises immediately adjoining the site to the north, and a couple of premises a little further afield. This is the site. It's on the corner of Abercrombie Street and Myrtle Street. And this is the existing building on the site. Essentially, the development on the site is made up of three buildings. The two on the left, or on the right-hand side of the image, the heritage item, and the building behind the tree is the building to be demolished and replaced with a three-story addition. So this is the site viewed from Abercrombie Street and the site viewed from Myrtle Street. It's a ground floor plan of the proposal, the new lecture theatre facility on the ground floor on the corner of Abercrombie and Myrtle Street. The first floor plan, office accommodation, the second floor plan, and then the roof plan. This is the elevation to Abercrombie Street and the elevation to Myrtle Street. And it's the north elevation to the adjoining premises to the north, which is essentially the existing building. It's a section, the north-south section through the building, and an east-west section. This slide shows the materials of the development, and this is an illustration of the addition looking south along Abercrombie Street. This is a photo montage of the proposal looking along Myrtle Street. And this is looking, again, along Myrtle Street in the opposite direction. In terms of compliance with the key controls, there is a non-compliance with the maximum 12-metre height limit and a non-compliance with a maximum 1.75 to 1 floor space ratio. The existing building is already over the 12-metre height limit, and it is also already over the floor space ratio control. In terms of floor space, the development will increase approximately 36 square metres of additional floor space. In terms of the DCP controls, the development complies with the three-storey control in the DCP. It complies with the requirement for bicycle parking. The application was referred to the Design Advisory Panel in October of 2018. The panel generally supported the proposal but raised some concerns regarding streetscape presentation, the design of the facades, the provision of an active frontage and visibility of rooftop plant. As a result of this, the application was amended to address these issues. So this is a photo montage of the original proposal on the left and the amended proposal on the right. The main changes in terms of those images are the treatment to the ground level on the corner, where the lecture theatre is, a provision of some windows and more active frontage, and then the effective increase in height of the addition by the provision of a parapet, which has the effect of hiding the rooftop plant. So the issues are essentially the height non-compliance, floor space ratio non-compliance, and the streetscape presentation, which has been addressed through the amended plans. In terms of height, clause 4.6 variation is supported. The existing building is already over the 12-metre height limit. The non-compliance results essentially from the provision of that parapet and rooftop plant. The higher parapet helps conceal the rooftop plant, and there's acceptable and minor overshadowing to neighbouring properties to the south as a result of the non-compliance with the height limit. This image shows the Myrtle Street frontage and the 12-metre height limit and the dotted line, so the majority of the new development over the height limit is that parapet and the rooftop plant. And this is a section through the building showing the height limit. In terms of the floor space ratio, the clause 4.6 variation is also supported. The existing development on site exceeds the floor space ratio. There'll be a further non-compliance due to the infill of the setback on the corner of Abercrombie and Myrtle Street, and this will create approximately 36 square metres of additional floor space over three levels. The infill provides for an appropriate built form to the street alignment. So this slide shows the additional floor space on the ground first and second floor that is to be created as a result of the infill of that setback. In terms of the streetscape presentation, the DCP does identify the site as having been subject to an active frontage control. The design has been amended to include glazing, mix of materials, and a well-detailed facade to provide for visual interest and activation. So the application is recommended for approval subject to conditions. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill. So I do have the applicant registered to speak. I have a number of representatives. I believe Chris Wilson from Willow Tree Planning is going to address the panel. So, Chris, if you can come forward, press the button to turn on the microphone and...
Off we go. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and panel members, and Mr. Yarn, and Mr. Mackay for your thorough presentation on the particulars of this application. We've worked very closely with Council and we endorse the recommendation. We also endorse the draft conditions that have been provided to us, and we've got the relevant experts here to discuss any questions that the panel may have of us, but we don't have anything further to say at the moment.
Thank you. So does the panel have any issues they would like to raise? Amelia?
Yeah, I had a question about the awning over the streetscape, that there isn't an awning there. Is that something you would consider including?
There we go. Thank you. Look, I'll have to defer to the client and to the architect in respect of that particular matter. If you don't mind, I'll invite Alex Zahns up to answer the question.
The question of awning. There's no awning on any of the buildings in the block between between Abercrombie and Buckland Street, on that side of the street. And this building is designed to fit in with the masonry character of it. There's also no openings for public entrance from that side of the street. There is an awning where relevant to the building on Abercrombie Street to mark the opening, the main entry to the facility. And again, we haven't replaced the awnings that are gone from the two original buildings that were there, the heritage listed items, but we've interpreted the awning where relevant for the building that has the entry. In other words, we didn't want to encourage people to go to a glazed window which doesn't have a door. So it's designed to mark the entry.
I guess I'm still not clear. Would you consider putting an awning on? So there's an awning on the building across the road, and this site is also shown in the DCP footway awnings map as a site that should have an awning on it.
We have considered that. There's an analysis of that streetscape, both Abercrombie and Myrtle Street, and Mar Street, if you like, because it changes that point. And we respectfully argue that the use of this building is different to the other three corners. The other three corners have a pub and food facilities, cafes. We think that the design of the building does not, and the function of the building beyond the design doesn't suit an awning. And we think it would detract from the, it would become a, let's say, an awning for an awning's sake. It has no real purpose for the building, and there's no continuous awning in the whole streetscape. For example, heading towards Broadway, there's terrace houses. Heading towards Buckland Street, there's no awnings. So it would be an anomaly on that corner of that street. No urban role, and there's no functional role.
Well, in terms of the urban role, I mean, there is one across the road, and certainly if it's pouring with rain, a little bit of an awning is better than no awning at all. And as your render shows, it's a heavily trafficked area for pedestrians.
We simply say there's no awnings anywhere else in both dimensions, for the whole block to Broadway and for the whole block to Myrtle Street, and it's not the character of the area. And so we think it's not an advantage of great significance and detracts from the design of the building.
Okay. Perhaps, Helen, did you want to raise any issues with that on that point or any other point? Yeah, maybe Mr. Yarn can respond in terms of the purpose of that document that we're looking at there, which is a DCP. Maybe to add some context from a policy point of view.
So generally, the awnings that are identified in the maps are where there are circumstances of continuous street activation. And generally, I know that does appear as a single building. And of course, it would offer perhaps some protection if for rain if you're crossing the road. But awnings are generally on activity streets where there are continuous frontages, where buildings will be infilled over time, and there's a sense, a strong message that it should be a continuous weather-protected passage, like Castle Ray Street, Pitt Street, and also on Broadway. I think the aim is to get Broadway, which is provides a strong connection, to have weather protection along it, although I have to say there's very large gaps. So I acknowledge that it is a single building identified, but it's not part of a network. And so I think in this instance, unlike some other cases that we're dealing with at the moment, where proponents have not provided warnings or wish to demolish existing warnings, which are shopping streets, this is in a much lower category in comparison.
I had one, we'll come back to that point, but I had one relatively minor by comparison point, which is that there was a submission that raised an issue with potential dilapidation. I think it was an adjoining terrace, and the council planner's response was that there was a standard condition imposed requiring a dilapidation survey. On checking, that condition hasn't actually been included, so I'm going to propose that standard condition be added for protection to that adjoining owner, which brings us back to the substantive issue of the awning and any other. Helen, were there any issues that you wanted to raise or any view that you wanted to express in relation to the awning question? And
I hadn't realised it was actually indicated as a site-specific location for an awning, and I'm just skimming through the awning policy now, which doesn't really talk to predominantly continuity of awnings. It talks about weather protection and the like, and even some of the examples illustrated in the policy are quite discrete elements. So I'm just wondering why in this particular case it wouldn't be appropriate to conform with council's policy. I mean, because it is a site that's been indicated for an awning. It's on a corner. It's corners on other sides of the street which have them. Notwithstanding, it's not a continuous awning condition.
Okay. So from Mr. Yarn's addressed the policy context. I suppose the remaining question is from an urban design point of view. So the applicant's got a view that they've expressed very clearly. If an awning was to be added, or a requirement for that to come back to Director City Planning for approval prior to activation of the consent, what would be the impact of that on the urban design element of the proposal?
Plan of the site was followed with an awning, the awning would have to cross the face of three buildings. So you've got the new building, which is relatively straightforward because it's flush and it's got a surface which relates to the boundary line. But then you've got a previous heritage building, which actually does drop down and it brings windows down to the top of the soffit of that band. And then you've got the three-windowed heritage building with a rusticated a cornice up of the extremities of the building. So that's just to note that the interface between a continuous awning has got different conditions as it crosses the new, the infill heritage and the end heritage buildings, which would require consideration whether or not that could be pulled off or not.
Any further views that panel members would like to put in response? I'm happy to briefly adjourn to discuss this and come back and make a final decision if panel members want to do that, or are you persuaded by Mr. Yarn's argument?
I would like to propose a condition requiring an awning. I don't know if we need to adjourn to work out the wording for that condition.
So what we're going to do is briefly adjourn and we will come back and make a final determination on this matter. I apologise, just let me say, like, people who are here for the following development application, there will be a brief delay, but we will, in fairness to this application, we need to cover off on this matter. Alex Zanz, do you want to make a final point?
I just want to comment that it's not easy to do an awning across those three conditions, as been previously mentioned, and the natural height of that awning would be at a difficult height for a reasonable level of money, or you would compromise the architecture of it significantly, and the awning would be going across a garage door entry, fire escape, and essentially a highly articulated, deep viewing window into an auditorium that can be curtained off when it's in use. And then it would be going into a private facility, so to speak. It would also then go across a window, which is not entering, which you don't enter into. So I think it would detract from the architecture and detract from the significance of the opening of the building as an institutional building. And I just emphasise that nowhere else in that whole block is there activation, as mentioned, or an awning appropriately placed on those buildings, terrace houses, another office building, and a historic warehouse building. It seems to me to be that this is a control which has come about from without the knowledge of this application going ahead. If it had been a retail facility, it would have been a different story, and it's not.
Look, I am going to briefly adjourn the panel meeting just to discuss this item. I don't think there's any other issues that the panel has with what's proposed. So I'll now briefly adjourn and we'll come back and make a determination on this matter. Thank you. Meeting reconvened, and so the panel's had a discussion about the awning issue and appreciated the advice of both city planner and also the response from the applicant that we heard. Nonetheless, the panel is going to propose an amendment to the consent, and I'm going to ask Amelia Thorpe to read through the proposed amendment.
Great. So the proposal is to turn condition 2 into design modifications into 2A, and then after that to add a 2B that reads, an additional awning is to be added from the northern boundary of the new building around the corner into Myrtle Street to the satisfaction... Around the corner into Myrtle Street, ensuring that pedestrian cover is provided to the crossing and to the satisfaction of the Director City Planning prior to the issue of construction certificate.
So it's not for the... So just to be clear, there is an there is an awning proposed as part of the most northern heritage building. We've accepted the argument that second heritage building towards the corner of Myrtle Street would be difficult to traverse with an awning, and we're not proposing that the B1 across that frontage, but and there's an existing street tree in that location, but to pick it up at the northernmost point of the new building around the corner into Myrtle Street, not necessarily for the full distance of that facade, in fact probably not, almost certainly not for the full distance of that facade, but to a point that can be negotiated with the Director of City Planning to achieve the aim of providing weather protection as outlined in the condition, but also I suppose importantly because there is a development control plan that does earmark this site for an awning, and we think it can be achieved while still respecting the urban design that has been thoughtfully considered through the design process. So with that amendment, and there was also a second amendment that we discussed earlier, adding the dilapidation condition. So with those two amendments, I'm going to move that the application be approved, subject to those amendments. All in favour say aye. Aye. And I declare that carried unanimously. I've thanked the applicant's representatives for their contribution and look forward to them working with Director of City Planning to fulfil that amendment. Thank you very much.
Yeah, if I can just take the opportunity to thank the City Council's Assessment Department for an outstanding job. Thank you.
Thank you for that. That brings us to item four, which is a development application for 83 to 105 Kent Street, Millers Point. And again, I will ask that Bill run through this application.
So this is an application for the use of the public footpath on Kent Street for outdoor dining in association with the existing licensed hotel premises at the Langham Hotel. The site is located within an R1 residential zone. The proposal is permissible with consent. The application is recommended for approval subject to conditions. The application was notified in September and October of last year. 498 owners and occupiers were notified and 7 submissions were received. The submissions related to the outdoor dining from 6:30 a.m. to midnight, which is what the application sought consent for, being excessive in a residential area. Noise impacts that will come from the use of the outdoor dining. The fact that there's insufficient space for pedestrians to walk past and an increase in traffic and parking issues. So this is the site identified in red. The submissions came from residential premises to the south on Kent Street. There's the existing Langham Hotel, and the location of the outdoor dining is towards the southern end of that premises, adjacent to the existing restaurant and bar. So this is the site viewed from Kent Street, and the proposed outdoor seating area basically extends from the corner of the building, more or less all the way across that part of the building you can see in the image. This is a view of the footpath from the corner from Kent and High Street, and this is a plan of the proposed outdoor dining area. When not in use, the tables and chairs associated with the outdoor dining are to be stored inside the premises. In terms of compliance with the DCP controls, the main control relates to the potential hours of operation of the outdoor dining. The control would normally allow for 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. as base hours, with the potential to extend till 10 p.m. The applicant has proposed 6:30 a.m. to midnight, so there's a non-compliance in relation to that control. So the issue is essentially the hours of operation of the outdoor dining, potential amenity impacts that might arise from the use of that area, and the clearance on the footpath for pedestrians to be able to pass by the outdoor dining. So the in terms of the hours of operation, a condition is proposed that would restrict the hours of operation to between 7 a.m. To 10 p.m., Monday to Sunday. And in terms of addressing the issue of having sufficient space on the footpath for pedestrians, sufficient clearance between the outdoor dining area and various obstacles such as street trees, it's proposed that the area of the outdoor dining be reduced down to an area of 12 square metres, measuring 9.2 metres long, 1.3 metres deep, as shown in the plan with the blue line. So that southern section of the area that they're seeking consent for, which is adjacent to the pedestrian crossing, is proposed to be deleted. So the application is recommended for approval, subject to the conditions. Thank you.
Bill, I have Paul Upham, the Highgate Owners Corporation.
Hello and good evening to everyone. Just want to thank the panel members for the opportunity to speak on this matter. I represent the Highgate Owners Corporation, 127 Kent Street at Millers Point, being 203 residential apartments. In this matter, Highgate supports approval of this development application before you with the recommended amendments, including that 7 tables and 14 chairs be permitted within the outdoor dining area. Thank you.
So Paul, you're saying you're happy with the amendments proposed by council staff?
Yes, that's correct, yes.
Panel have any questions for Mr. Hyam? No, I think that was clear. Thank you very much. Any questions or observations panel members would like to make?
I just would... So, in fact, the comment we had was in supporting an increased area. Than what's proposed in the amendment. Didn't you say 7 tables? Yep. And the recommendation from council is for a smaller area than that, half the area.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. Where the approval is an actual area of 12 square metres, and it'll be what you can reasonably fit in that area.
I'm just being pragmatic as to what is achievable in that area, which implies that there's only 3 potential tables or maybe 4 at a squeeze. So, I just wanted to make sure that that was the median, the balanced approach, and it was able to accommodate something practical. Without being...
Jan can respond, please.
Look, bearing in mind the position of the crossing and the trees and the other obstacles, that the conclusion was that this area that's shown in the blue outline would be the appropriate area to allow outdoor seating. There are a number of arrangements that you can... undertake in a 12 square metre zone for outdoor seating. Some are very cramped and to others are much more generous. So we've gone away from attempting to predict the number of seats and tables to just what is the most appropriate area and leave it flexible.
Okay. So with that clarification, I'm going to put the proposal as recommended by council staff for approval subject to conditions. All in favour say aye. Aye, and I will declare that carried unanimously. I thank Mr. Hyam for attending and putting his view. And at that point, I declare the meeting closed and thank staff and fellow panel members and members of the public who have attended tonight. Thank you very much.